Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, why the fast theme? Well, we're doing 10-minute fast takes this hour. Next hour, we'll go deep on one issue. But this is 10-minute topic number two. What was Wendy Davis really so upset about? The big news surrounding the abortion debate earlier this week, of course, was the hours-long filibuster by Texas state lawmaker Wendy Davis to defeat a bill that would have placed new limits on abortions in the state. Joining me with a 10-minute take on Wendy Davis in national context is Elizabeth Nash, the state issues manager at the Guttmacher Institute, which studies reproductive rights in America. Elizabeth, welcome to WNYC.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So first, I want to play a clip, 17 seconds, of Wendy Davis on the night of the filibuster.
The consequence of the ambulatory surgical center provision of SB 5 will decrease in a fairly dramatic form the number of centers at which abortions can and will be provided in Texas.
The number of centers at which abortions can and will be provided in Texas. Can you explain to us how many abortion clinics there are in Texas, how many may have been eliminated by SB 5, and how?
Sure. So what we're looking at when we think about Texas and abortion clinics, there are about 42 of them right now. And most of them, probably not surprising to know, they are clustered in big cities. What the result of SB 5 would do, assuming you look at what the status is now and you just import the requirements from SB 5, and you would see a decrease from 42 to 5 clinics. And those 5 clinics would be in the 4 big cities in Texas: San Antonio, Dallas, Houston, and Austin.
Why?
Well, because what we have right now, there are already existing regulations for abortion clinics in Texas. But the what they call ambulatory surgical center requirements would require remodeling for those clinics, and that remodeling could be just too costly, financially prohibitive for those clinics to make those changes. And I think the real point here is that those changes do not improve patient care. So we're not talking about making changes that have this dramatic impact on the well-being of patients. It's simply to make clinics go through these changes and get better HVAC systems, like air conditioning and heating systems, mm-hmm. have certain parking lot sizes, have certain types of general storage rooms or janitor's closets, which don't impact care but cost a lot of money to put in place.
So put this in national context for us. Is this particular kind of bill part of a national movement by the anti-abortion rights side to pass bills just like this?
Yes, absolutely. And we've really seen this issue pick up steam since the 2010 elections. And we're seeing this issue around having requirements around ambulatory surgical centers become a focus for abortion opponents, as well as another provision in SB 5, which would have required abortion providers to have hospital privileges. And you combine those two issues, and you really see this effort moving across the country.
Is this the heart of the national anti-abortion fight right now?
Yes, because this is, in a sense, with one stroke of the pen, right, one bill being signed, you can close down many clinics with either one of these requirements, as opposed to enacting, say, a waiting period where it simply makes it harder for a woman to get an abortion. But in the end, if she can, work with the system, she'll still get the abortion.
Is this in line with the bill the House of Representatives passed last week, which had another thing that was in the Texas bill to restrict almost all abortions after 20 weeks of pregnancy?
Right. That is another trend we are seeing at the state level. So the idea here is that abortions would be banned at a certain point in gestation, and only under very limited circumstances would women be able to get an abortion at 20 weeks. And so far, we've seen 11 states enact similar legislation, and there are some court cases. So three of those states are not in effect, and we're waiting for the law in North Dakota to go into effect. So in right now, we have 7 states that are in effect.
Why is 20 the battle line here, and why is 24 the current practice? Most states allow abortions up to when the fetus becomes what's generally called viable, around 24 weeks.
Right, and I think you hit on an important distinction to make. So the U.S. Supreme Court has held that no state may ban abortion before viability, and viability must be determined by a doctor, and as you say, is around 24, 25 weeks of pregnancy. After that point...
And viability means if the baby were to be removed from the mother's womb, that it could live?
Exactly, with or without help, like an incubator and that sort of thing. And so the point being that before viability, a state may not ban abortion, but after that point, a state may limit access to abortion, but they must maintain exceptions for the woman's life and health. So she could still get an abortion if her health was at risk or her life was endangered. And what we see with these 20-week bans is, one, they are before viability, so they conflict with the Supreme Court in that respect, and they also conflict with the respect that they don't include meaningful exceptions that protect a woman's life and health. And they're pointing to this 20-week, to the 20 weeks, because that's when they say a fetus is able to feel pain. A point that particular data point is contested and by all the medical groups, and none of the evidence points to that being true.
Since these bills are trying to make it illegal to get an abortion after 20 weeks, and to some people 20 weeks does seem far long, who are the people getting abortions at 21, 22, 23 weeks?
Sure. Well, right. I think it's helpful to have a little context. Certainly, nearly 90% of abortions take place in the first trimester, the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. So they're really, and our data show that there are only about 1.5% of abortions that take place at 21 weeks or later. So we're really talking a small slice of the abortions that are provided in this country. And we don't know exactly who are getting these abortions, but for anecdotally, what we know is that they are often women who were carrying a wanted pregnancy, and something has gone wrong with either her health or there's something, some sort of fetal impairment that they've discovered. Those are the types of cases that we hear about happening. So women are then looking for an abortion at that point in pregnancy.
Are these the two main political thrusts of the anti-abortion rights movement right now, 20 weeks and requirements for upgrading abortion facilities?
I would probably throw one more in there, and that would be restricting access to what we call non-surgical abortion. So that's using the abortion pill to start an abortion. And we're seeing restrictions that really affect rural women in that the types of restrictions we're seeing are banning the use of telemedicine, which is a process where you can communicate with a provider from your clinic. Let's say you're in Ames, Iowa, you're in a clinic, you can communicate with a specialist in Des Moines. And the idea here is that rural women would be able to access early abortion because medication abortion is only available up until about the 7th week of pregnancy. So it's really these types of restrictions that prohibit telemedicine for medication abortion limit access for rural women. And this is a trend we are seeing across the country.
We've got a minute left in this 10-minute topic. We should mention that Wendy Davis's filibuster did not kill that bill. Governor Perry just called another special session that I think begins next Monday, so she's probably not going to be able to literally filibuster this forever. But in our last minute, now that we've gone through the main political thrust of the anti-abortion rights movement, what are the abortion rights advocates doing primarily to expand abortion rights these days, because both sides do their thing?
Right. Well, unfortunately, a lot of our work has been defensive as of late. But, you know, I'd really like to point out what's happening in New York. New York really has the opportunity to upgrade their abortion law. I mean, New York was on the forefront in 1970 with the law that is still on the books. And unfortunately, the law that's on the books now doesn't meet the same standards that have been put in place by the U.S. Supreme Court. So we have a lot of work ahead of us to ensure that even the women in New York have the policies in place to help support them when they are in the situation of needing an abortion.
Just in case Roe is overturned.
Exactly.
We thank our guest from the Guttmacher Institute, Elizabeth Nass, a Nash State Issues Manager for the Guttmacher Institute, which studies reproductive rights in America. Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.